Hare Krishna. So we will be discussing systematically overview of the Srimad Bhagavatam, starting from the first canto onwards, first 1.1.1, and in small sections we will discuss the whole Bhagavatam over the next whatever time it takes, probably several years. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is known as the Amala Puran. It is the spotless Puran, as we will discuss when it comes with 1.1.2. It rejects Kaitava Dharma. So it starts with a description of the Absolute Truth in universal non-sectarian terms. So let's look at the verse. Janma adhyasya tanvaitartaschartesvabhikyasvarat tene brahmrdayadikavaye muhiyanti yatsuraya tejo vari mridam yatha vinimetra tirukta sargo amrusha dhamna svena sada nirashta kahakam kuhakam satyam param dhimahi. So satyam param dhimahi. So the way I will discuss the Bhagavatam is we could go elaborately into the Acharya's commentaries, and we want this to be an overview. So I won't go too much into the Acharya's commentaries, especially the technicalities, but I will focus on those aspects of the Acharya's commentaries that illumine our understanding of the Bhagavatam's internal flow and message, and the relevance of the Bhagavatam to our daily life and to contemporary thought. And for this, we will look at Prabhupada's commentary as well as previous Acharya's commentaries. So we won't be studying either Prabhupada's commentary or the previous Acharya's commentaries exhaustively, but we'll be looking at it from the point of view of primarily relevance. A relevance for a deeper understanding of Bhagavatam, a deeper understanding of ourselves based on the Bhagavatam, and a deeper understanding of the world through the eyes of the Bhagavatam. So, Satyam Param Dhimahi. The Bhagavatam starts by saying that we will meditate on the Absolute Truth. Satyam Param and Dhimahi. Dhimahi is meditation, as we know. Dhimahi is the word that comes in the famous Brahma Gayatri Mantra. And this is found in the Vedas also, the Gayatri Mantra. And this indicates that the Bhagavatam is also akin to the Gayatri Mantra. In fact, it is an exposition of what the Gayatri Mantra actually is. Because the Gayatri Mantra, if we look at it literally, it seems to be like a meditation on the sun god. Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya. So generally we don't recite the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Gayatri Mantra fully, because it is, as Srila Prabhupada explained, meant for the Brahmanas. But the important thing is that at one level it seems to talk about Dhimahi, meditation on the sun god. However, the sun god, the source of illumination that is referred to in the Gayatri Mantra, is actually referring to not just the physical illumination for the eyes, but the illumination for the heart, towards illumination to see the spiritual realities of life. And so in that sense it refers to the Absolute Truth. Chakravarti Pad in his commentary in the 11th canto also explains that, it's 12th canto actually, he explains that this refers to the Ishtadeva of sun god is Suryanarayan. So Satyam Param Dhimahi. So it refers not just to, we are not meditating on the sun god, but on the Aradhyadeva of the sun god, who is Suryanarayan. So now what are the characteristics of that Absolute Truth on which we are going to meditate? So this verse is like an invocation. At the same time, it is also introduction which encapsulates what is going to come in the later part of the Bhagavatam. That means that this verse and the next two verses are foundational for us to understand what the Bhagavatam is about. Just like when we hear a talk, if we are going to hear a class, this often at the start of the class certain statements are made which help us understand what that class is going to be about. Authors, books that guide authors how to write, they tell that the first sentence of a book is critical because it will determine, it is said to be like the hook. It should be able to attract the reader's attention and grip them and pull them inside. It should hook their attention. That's why it's called a hook. And so there are books written about how to write the first sentence of a book. So, now this is talked about in modern times, but this is understood in traditional circles also. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is right in its beginning giving us the hook by telling what is the speciality of this book. There are so many books all over the world, but why should this book be read among all those books that we describe in the first three verses? Satyam Param Dhimahi, absolute truth, meditate on that absolute truth. So there is a very significant progression of thought in the Bhagavatam from the Dhimahi that is referred in this verse and the Rasika, Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavukaha. So the third verse talks about relishing. So here it is meditating and then afterward it's relishing. So meditation is done on the, generally speaking, if we look at the overall flow of the Bhagavatam, on a sort of passive object of meditation. I meditate on a mountain, Dhimahi, meditate on the grandness of the sky, vastness of the sky overhead. So Dhimahi refers to some extent to the concept of impersonal meditation on the Brahman. Not necessarily, but it can refer to that. And rasika, relish, become a relisher, that refers to relish the personal aspect of the absolute truth. So just as Shukadeva Goswami at the start of the Bhagavatam was meditating on the impersonal aspect, but it's that evolution of Shukadeva Goswami from a impersonalist to a personalist, that is from Dhimahi to Rasika, is something that is talked about in the Srimad Bhagavatam at large. And that's how that journey of Shukadeva Goswami is traced in a conceptual way in the first three verses, and it will be developed progressively over the thousands of verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Janmadi Asyata, let's look at the characteristics of that absolute truth which the Bhagavatam wants us to meditate on. Janmadi Asyataha. So Janmadi Asyataha is the second sutra of the Vedanta Sutra. First is Athato Brahma Jikyasa. Second is Janmadhyasyataha. Now, there are many correlations which point to an internal harmony within the Vedic scriptures. So just as this verse refers to it's one fragment of this verse refers to the Vedanta Sutra. Similarly, this Dhimahi invokes the Gayatri, and like that there are many correlations. This verse is quite Upanishadic. The Puranas in general have relatively simple meters for their verses. The verses are in simple Sanskrit. But among the Puranas, the Srimad Bhagavatam is most Upanishadic, most of the style of the Sanskrit of the Shrutis. So this is itself a linguistic speciality of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the nature of the Sanskrit is also very special. Now we know the Sanskrit language changes just like all other languages change. If we read, say, Shakespeare's English, there is filled with thee and thou and thy, and we need a lot of reader's aid to understand what he's saying. Similarly, to understand now the English language is the same, but because the English language has changed over 500 years. Similarly, Sanskrit has also changed over the centuries. And based on that, some scholars try to postulate the idea that this book is later and this book is earlier. Now, the simple point is that that book was put in a written form, and the written form that is available to us is of a later form, is a later version of it. But so scholars try to separate the Bhagavad, the Puranas and the Shrutis and the Smritis into different categories because the nature of the Sanskrit is different. But this doesn't necessarily mean that they belong to two different historical epochs. It simply means that they are meant for two different audiences. The same person can, when the person is giving a, say, a talk to postgraduate students, and the person is giving a talk to the general public, may use different linguistic styles. So that's how there is different linguistic style. But the important point over here is that the Bhagavatam is called a Purana, but its linguistic style is not like other Puranas. It is like the Upanishads to a large extent. So janmadyasya tah anvayaditartascha artheshva vigyasvarat. So the first characteristic is that the janmadyasya tah janma adyasya. Now in this world there is basic two aspects to material existence are space and time. So janmadyasya tah, that it is the source of creation and everything else. This talks about a causal origin in terms of time. And when Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo in the Bhagavad Gita, mattaha sarvam pravartate. So, sometimes he may be talking in terms of causal origin in terms of space or things. So, actually, janmadhyasya taha, although it is referring to causal origin in terms of time, a thing is born, then it grows, then it reproduces, it tries to maintain itself, it deteriorates, and then it's destroyed. So that way, the things have their flow. But the causal origin of everything is ultimately God. So causal origin in terms of things and causal origin in terms of time. Everything is Krishna. Janmadyasya taha anvayaditartascha artheshva gibhyasvarat. So, Swarat refers to this, that Swarajite is independent, is absolutely not controlled by anyone else. Of course, here when the verse is being talked about, it is not including, this verse is talked about more in an ontological sense. It is not talked about in more in a devotional sense. In the 8th canto of Bhagavatam, in the Ambarish Maharaj pastime, it will be described how Aham Bhakta Paradhino Yasvatantra Ivadvijaha. The same Lord will say that he is Aswatantra. He is said to be absolutely independent over here as Swarat. But there it will be told that he is Aswatantra. So that is actually out of Bhakti. So here the Bhagavatam is first telling us that the absolute truth is ontologically, in terms of existence, completely independent. And anvaya ditartascha artheshva abhigya. So abhigya is conscious. And this verse itself says that anvaya ditartascha is directly and indirectly conscious of everything. So it's not that the world has been created and then after that there is nothing to do of that absolute truth with the world. There is a school of thought called deism, which says that God is the creator but not the control of the world. God doesn't have much to do with the world as it functions now. It is, the world's functioning is happening by mechanical laws. So the Lord is, this is not the deistic ideas are not exactly according to the Vedic scriptures. Yes, Bhagwan himself is in the spiritual world and he has set up systems by which he doesn't need to interact and manage the world on a constant basis. But as the super Paramatma, the Lord is there in this world and he is conscious of everything. In fact, he is present in everything. So anvayaditartascha artheshva vigyasvarat. So the word anvayaditartas can have many meanings. We'll just focus on what is relevant to understand. The central focus of this verse. Now, this verse is so complex, as we know that Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur spoke for days and days and days on this verse. And Madhusudan Saraswati, a great Vaishnava scholar who was a great scholar, who was apparently in an impersonal lineage, but he also wrote devotional expositions, and who is quoted by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur several times in his Gita commentary. Since he has written a full book on the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, Patham Shloka Tatparya. So this verse is so filled with compact, condensed philosophical import that it can be spoken on elaborately. So we will stick to the basics here. So anvaiditartas, directly and indirectly. So the Lord is present Himself in this world, and by His direct presence He is conscious, and indirectly through His various agents. Matter and spirit are His energies, and there are among the souls, there are many empowered representatives of the Supreme Lord who act as witnesses, act as representatives for the function of cognizance, for the purpose of knowing. We know through the Ajamil pastime that there are 12 witnesses, and they are all representatives of the Supreme Lord. So, anvayaditartas cha arteshu abhigyaswarat. Just as on my body, if a fly comes and sits, then I can know it by seeing with my eyes the fly is there. That means I use another sense to know it. Or otherwise, the whole skin is also one sense. And through touch I know it. So this is a crude example. But the point here is that the whole body is like, the whole universe is like the body of the Supreme Lord. And anvayitartas charteshva abhigyaswara tene brahmarudaya yadikavaye muhyanti yatsurayaha. So, that absolute truth, who is the source of everything, who is conscious of everything, who he's not, that means what is the point being made over here? He from him everything has come, and he is still aware of all those things, and whatever awareness, whatever knowledge is there in this world, that has also come from him, and that is indicated through the third part of the verse. Tene brahmaruda yahadikavaye. So Adikavaye is Brahmaji, the original seer, the original wise person, the original philosopher. And he tene Brahma. So here the word Brahma is mistaken to be Brahmaji, but it refers to Brahma is the spiritual knowledge. And that was given in the heart. So the Lord, so there's a progression of thought over here. The Lord is the source of everything. He is conscious of everything. He makes people conscious of that reality through Brahmaji. So, why is that person worthy of meditation? Because he is the source of knowledge of everyone. Brahmaji within the world is the most important person. Because whenever the demigods have trouble, they all first go to Brahmaji. And then there is somebody greater than Brahmaji is talked about over here. Tene Brahmarudaya Adikavaye. So he is the person who gave knowledge to Brahmaji. Just like if we have a university where there's a particular professor. Now whatever questions people have, that person generally answers the questions. And you can say that person to be very wise. And then if we come to know that somebody else is the teacher of that professor, we start naturally have respect. How great must that person be? So that's the idea of emphasizing the point over here that Brahmaji was the first person who got knowledge in the universe, and from him everybody has got the knowledge in the universe. And that person who gave knowledge to everyone, who got the first knowledge, got knowledge from Krishna, from that absolute truth. Who that absolute truth is not yet mentioned. And then some of the question may come, okay, he gave knowledge to Brahma, but there are so many people who do not have knowledge in this world. So why is that? Muhyanti yat surayaha. That actually
By him, even the Suryas, even the Devatas get bewildered. Now, this may seem a little confusing. This may seem to be contradicting the previous attribute that if he gives knowledge, then why does he cause confusion? Actually, the point is elaborated in third line of the verse. But here the emphasis is Muhyanti yat Suraiha indicates that about him, even the wise person get bewildered. That absolute truth is not very easy to understand. Name vidhus suraganaha prabhavam namaharshe. In 10.2 in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says the same point, that people do not know about me. And who doesn't know about me? Not just ordinary people, but even the devatas and the rishis. And Krishna gives a reason over there. It's related to what is being talked about over here. Aham adirhi devanam maharishinam cha sarvashah. He says, I am the source of all of them. So we see illusion in this world also, but that illusion is also not automatic. That illusion is also ultimately an arrangement of someone. And that arrangement is of the Supreme Lord. So Muhyanti yat Suraiha, in one sense it refers to that even the great souls cannot know him, the Suras cannot know him. The other sense is that by him the Suras can also get bewildered. That means he's so clever that even the Devatas can get bewildered. For example, if there's a magician, the magician does some sleight of hand and some jugglery of movement by which the person thinks, that people think that that magician has produced a rabbit from a hat, say. Now, if there are other expert magicians, they can point out what was the trick that was done. But suppose there is a master magician, champion magician, that the way that magician does the tricks such that even those who are considered expert magicians are not able to spot it. So like that, Muhyanti yat Suraiha. So just as the champion magician can bewilder the other, even expert magicians. So like that, by the Supreme Lord, Muhyanti yat Suraiha. So we will see this in the 10th canto when Indra gets bewildered in the Govardhan Leela, Brahma gets bewildered in the Brahma Vimohan Leela. And what is that bewilderment? That is described in the third line. Tejo vari mridamitha vinimayo yatrati sargo amrisha. So by him, this basic illusion is what? By him the unreal world appears real. This is a very significant point, that dhamna svena nirashta kuhukam satyam param dhimahi. So this particular line, mrsha, is it real or is it unreal? So that has been a topic of significant discussion and even differing explanations among our acharyas. Chakravarti Pad and Jiva Goswami in his Sandarbhas and Sridhar Swami in his Tika, they give slightly differing interpretations. And at a later stage in our study, we will discuss about the different strategies that are used by different acharyas for explaining certain verses and why there may be contradictions at certain points. But at this stage, the important point is that by him, it is by his arrangement that this world appears to be false. That means if it had not been for him, the world would not appear to be false. It is because of him that whatever is actually unreal appears real. So this is actually an elaboration of Muhyanti yat Suraiha, and is a continuation of the thought of the overall glorification of the absolute truth. That absolute truth is so wise, so mysterious, so skillful that absolute truth can make even the unreal appear real. That absolute truth can make the relative truth appear the absolute truth for many people. And that is the extraordinary nature of that absolute truth. Now, why has this nature come about? That will be the subject of discussion later on in the Bhagavatam.
But at this stage, this is seen as a glorification. It's a significant point that even the fact that people get bewildered about the absolute truth is also a glorification of that absolute truth. It's like I earlier gave the example of a magician. So that even expert people get bewildered to see the magic as real, that is a glorification of the magician. Similarly, this is a glorification of the absolute truth's remarkable abilities. And dhamna svena nirashtak hukam. Dhamna, so that absolute truth, its significant dhamma. Dhamma generally refers to abode, the place of residence. So dhamna svena sada, that absolute truth resides in his own dham, and satyamparam dhimahi. So while residing in his own dham, that absolute truth does what? That absolute truth from there spreads out the influence and causes people to become illusioned. Now, this may raise a question that why should the absolute truth cause somebody to get illusioned? That will be answered in the later texts of the Bhagavatam. We'll discuss that. Now, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has given an elaborate analysis of each of these three words, of this verse, giving multiple meanings. And in one of the meanings, he shows factually how this whole verse refers to how the absolute truth is Krishna. And those of you who are interested further can read Sararatha Darshini and understand that. We will have to look at each of the words separate context, and then we can understand it.